What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be talking all things Wizards Media Day. If you missed it, the Washington Wizards hosted Media Day for the 2025-26 season on Monday. By the time I'm recording this, it's actually past midnight, so it's Tuesday. Hopefully, you guys will hear it Tuesday morning and beyond. I didn't attend Media Day. I attended 2 years ago, didn't go last year. Had some other things here at Penn State, so I wasn't able to get up there for actual Media Day, but had a bunch of my friends that were there. You know, my guy Ben Strober and Abdullah from Locked On Wizards were there. Obviously, Chase Hughes, Bijan Todd from Monumental were there. You know, I think David Aldridge was there for The Athletic. You know, obviously a bunch of people there for Media Day, a lot of coverage online on Twitter and so on. So I'm sure you've seen some of like the major quotes and some of the more important things, or rather you've kind of seen it all, right? And I hope that this episode can kind of serve as, you know, I'm sifting through all of it, and I tried to pick out some of the bits and pieces that I thought were compelling and interesting from all the stuff that I had seen. I listened back to a bunch of the media availabilities. And if you also want to do that, it's on the Wizards YouTube. I think it's at Wash Wizards on YouTube. I think they posted every single player's availability, and then also the availability for both Brian Keefe and then Will Dawkins, who was about a week ago. So if you want to listen to them in full, they'll be on YouTube. But for now, I kind of want to dive into sort of some of the major takeaways I had. And I first want to start how the Wizards started the day, which is by releasing the full training camp roster. And I kind of sifted through this a bit earlier in terms of the last pod, kind of detailing who were some camp invites, the two-way contracts, standard deals, who were cut candidates, and so forth. And Chris Haynes did report a couple weeks ago, like Kadari Richmond did Scala BCA and Alanis Williams, you know, that they had camp invites or exhibit 10s with the Wizards. I'm not saying Chris's reporting was incorrect, but the Wizards never announced those signings on their PR account, on their main account. They weren't on NBA.com and on the 21-man training camp roster, which 21 is the max you can have on training camp roster. Those three guys weren't there. And so I would assume they're just going to be on the go-go at some point. Like they might have signed exhibit 10s. And maybe they just didn't make the cut for the training camp roster. I'm not sure. But if you are confused as to why I might not name them right here, that is the reason. So I'm going to go through and just kind of name the players on this 21-man training camp roster for the Wizards. It's broken down into 16 standard NBA contracts, 3 two-way contracts, and 2 camp invites. The camp invites are Jonathan Pierre out of Belmont. He spent summer league with the Wizards. I did kind of a dive into him on the last pod. Kind of the, you know, a four, bigger guy, has shown an ability to shoot the ball, needs to be more efficient in that, obviously, can rebound too. And then you got Kashawn Gilbert, you know, speedy, shifty, very fun playmaking guard, a good defender as well for the guard position out of Iowa State, undrafted rookie. I really like what he did in summer league as well. I think he'll be a, you know, exhibit 10 into G League with the go-go guy. But those are the two camp invites. And then you got 3 guys on two-way contracts. Tristan Vukcevic, who showed flashes at the end of last season. And in summer league, you got Jameer Watkins, who Washington took in the second round in this past draft. And then you got Sharif Cooper, who was 40th pick in 2021. I talked in depth about him again on the last pod, the last episode. But he was signed about a week ago by the Wizards to a two-way deal to fill the void there. He's I think 6'1" guard, a really solid shooter, really fast in the open court, can push the pace. Still has some potential, obviously, drafted a couple years ago, but I do like his game, coming out of Auburn. So that's kind of the back end of the roster, the camp invites that will likely turn into go-go players, and you got your 2-3 guys on two-way deals. But then you got 16 standard contracts. Marvin Bagley, Malachi Branham, Bub Carrington, Justin Champagne, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, Anthony Gill, AJ Johnson, Trey Johnson, Dylan Jones, Corey Kispert, CJ McCollum, Chris Middleton, Will Riley, Alex Saar, and Cam Whitmore. Teams by opening night, so it'll be, I think it's the 21st for most teams, I think. the 22nd for the Wizards when they'll open at Milwaukee. But for most teams, or I guess for all teams, actually, it's the 21st that is like the final day. I think by opening night, you need to finalize your 15-man roster. The Wizards have an issue a little bit there because they have 16. It was fine in 15 until they re-signed Gil after they waived him. So he's back now with the team, I would assume, on a one-year vet minimum deal. And so now you kind of got at you're at a crossroads where someone's going to have to get cut, traded, or whatever. And so I talked again at length on the last pod. So I don't want to harp on it too much before getting into some media day stuff. But Dylan Jones, Malachi Branham on the back end of that roster. Gil's old. He's obviously still a possible cut candidate. I don't know why they'd waive him, then sign him back just to cut him again. They did it with Taj Gibson a couple years ago. But again, I believe that was not under Dawkins and Winger, and that was under the jurisdiction of he who will not be named. I'll name Tommy Shepard. But he's no longer in the equation. Obviously, it's a new regime, new front office. So I don't know how they'll handle these things. But seems to me like Jones, Branham makes sense. But that's the training camp roster, 16 standard contracts. I believe for this season, all of the 16 are fully guaranteed except Justin Champagne, who's, I think, fully guaranteed in January. I doubt he'll get cut. He was too phenomenal last year, double-double machine towards the final month, throughout the final month, honestly. So that would be surprising. But that's kind of a rundown of the training camp roster that was released Monday morning by the Wizards. Moving forward into Media Day. If you don't know what Media Day is, it's, I mean, basically photo video wise for the team to take photos of all the guys in their new threads and their Wizards uniforms, do a bunch of different things content wise, like the Wizards admin for their Twitter, the person who runs the Wizards Twitter account, like, I guess, gave it to a bunch of the players. And so like they were going back and forth. I think Bub was saying that, talking about Trey Johnson, cause it seems like they're pretty close off the court already. They have a nice little bonding connection. Trey Johnson was saying that Bub's 1-3, I think, in one-on-ones against him. Again, content-wise, it was all right. I didn't think the Wizards really did much. They did that trend where they asked the players to sign a picture, and it's a picture of them when they're a kid. That was big maybe like 5 months ago, probably longer than that. So I don't know. Like I thought they could have done a lot better on social media. They posted some pictures of the players like taking selfies, and Keyshawn took over and took selfies of everyone. Again, it wasn't breathtaking social media content by any means. And I don't know who's really plugged into that more so than what the players and the coach is actually saying. But for my people that are plugged in, I didn't think the Wizards did too much impressive stuff for the day, too much that was really like unique or that garnered a lot of engagement, I guess I should say, which I think is the whole probably goal of those posts. But that's also what Media Day is for, is like photo wise, video wise, stuff like that. I'm sure like all the stuff you see for like on the Jumbotron, like if players like get loud when it's like the fourth quarter, that's probably done at Media Day too. But that's kind of that side. And then you obviously have the interview side where Brian Keefe took the podium first. And then I believe it's, or at least when I was there, it was all 15 players on the roster. It doesn't seem like any two-way guys spoke or any of the camp invites, obviously. I don't know if I saw anything about Will Riley either, but most of the guys on the active roster, standard contracts, spoke. It's a one-on-one session, just like 10, 15 minutes between them and all the media that's there. Get asked questions, answer the questions. It's all posted on YouTube, obviously, like I mentioned at the top of the show, so you can go watch it. But some notes of mine, because again, I don't want you to have to go and watch. I think it was like my guy Ben Strober said it was like 2.5 hours, 45 minutes of interviews. Like, I doubt you guys want to go and sit through and sift through all that. So I'm going to try to kind of be your guide to all the most important things that I saw on the day at Media Day. Starting in order, I guess, with Brian Keefe, who's entering his technically second full season as the Wizards coach. He spent obviously half that season as interim after Wes Unseld Jr. was fired. And look, it's not like, I mean, the Wizards have been awful under Keefe. It's not like, and again, it's not like it's Keefe's fault, but it's 33 wins in two seasons. Won a couple games the year before as interim, but realistically, judging him on his full 2 years, I guess, yeah, he's entering his third season then. Am I messing this? I might be messing this timeline up. It's been a long day. It's like 12:45 right now. But basically, you know, no, I'm right. This is going to be Keefe's third full season. He's done a solid job. It seems like the players really do like him. Obviously, when he got hired full time, they seem to be really rallying around Keefe, you know, and kind of around what the Wizards are trying to build here. Keefe's big on player development, and you know, he stressed that in his presser. He also stressed defense, which, look, he stressed defense the entire time he's been the Wizards head coach. Stressing defense, I will say, is a lot different than actually playing or having your team ready to play good defense, whether that's schematically or talent-wise or IQ-wise, being in the right spots. You know, you can say one thing, but actions speak a lot better than words. And like he talked about buy-in on defense and how the first practice of training camp will be very defensive-focused. It just seems kind of like coach speak to me. It seems like, yes, you want to have a good defense, but you also said that last year and the year before. And the year before, you were at a 118.9 defensive rating, which was 29th in the league. And then you had a dramatic rise to a 118 flat defensive rating and stayed at 29th the following year, which was last season. So, like, the only team's worse is Utah, who's also been terrible. So again, it's you got to practice what you preach, and it's one thing to say you're stressing defense, you're stressing competition. That's terrific to hear, and that's kind of what media day is, right? It's like all of these good things because it's not like you have any sample size, any games throughout that, you know, upcoming season to base it off of or compare it to. It's, you know, he wants to play good defense. He's stressed that. It's just his team's habit, and I don't think that's a Keefe problem. I think it's a personnel problem. It's not like this team has had great defenders. It's not like even this year they have great defenders. They have some in Bilal, in Keyshawn, in Sarr. Like, they have those guys, but it's the guys around them aren't that great either. And so it's not like you can really judge Keefe based on that. All I'm trying to say is, like, yeah, Keefe came out and talked about defense, talked about guys competing in camp. But obviously you'd want to be able to see that before, obviously, you know, praising him for what he's preaching. He also, I believe, declined to name starters, declined to name rotation, really didn't want to talk about minutes, which is fair. I mean, they haven't even had a practice, a training camp yet. And so I'm sure he wants to keep that open, use that as open competition, doesn't want to label anybody a starter, make them become complacent, completely make sense as a coach. That was kind of real, like the only highlights that I got from that. These won't be in order for the players, but just some couple quick hitting things. I saw that from AJ Johnson's presser, he said he added 9 pounds of muscle. He did look noticeably bigger. Varun Shankar of the Washington Post tweeted out a picture of him. He said he looked noticeably bigger, like, I guess, in person. I did think he looked bigger on, you know, in the photo. And that just might be me looking at it from like, oh, he gained 9 pounds of muscle. That's what he said. Yes. Now in my mind, he looks like he's grown. Like, I don't know if I would have thought that if I didn't read that before. So again, you take it for what you will. The picture's up on Varun's Twitter. It's also, you can watch the video of Johnson's presser on YouTube. But that's obviously great because I think a couple of the things that I mentioned in my kind of exit interviews from last year about Johnson was he has a lot of talent and a lot of upside, but he's just too skinny. You know, he's what, 6'5 and 160 pounds? Like, and I keep making the comparison. I'm 5'9. I might be 5'8. I'll give myself 5'9 here. It's my show. No one's gonna fact check me. 5'9, I'm like 160. So again, that's like 7 inches on me, and we're the same weight. That can't happen. Like, that's crazy. And I'm not even like a strong guy. I'm a pretty regular build. And like the fact that we are that far apart in height and the same weight for an NBA player, like, you're going to get pushed around. That's just how it's going to work. You're not strong enough on defense to hold your own. You're going to get bullied and picked on, which is what happened offensively. Excuse me. When you drive to the rim, again, it's tough to finish through contact. You kind of go flying at times. It's just he needs to get stronger base. He needs to get stronger in the upper body, in his shoulders. It seems like he's taken initiative to do that, which is great. And the other thing is being more being smarter with the ball. Again, he played a lot of point guard in summer league for that second unit. If he wants to be a point guard in the league, he needs to make way better decisions. And again, he's only 20, maybe 21 now. he's still really young, only in his second year in the NBA. So hopefully he also did that this offseason. But obviously adding muscle is the first step, and that's nice to see from AJ. Alex R took the podium, talked about his shot diet. My guy Bijan Todd tweeted about this, but Sar basically said, quote, "Anything close to the basket is my focus right now," end quote. It's how it should be. He took 5 threes a game last year as a 7-foot center. I'd really prefer that doesn't happen. Shot 32% from three. That's not awful for a center in his first year. Not great either, especially taking 5 a game. I mean, if you were an opposing team, it's like, I'm not about to go out and guard you there. That's stupid. If you make it, you make it. And like against Denver, he made it, and he made Jokic look bad defensively. But most games, he clearly didn't make most of the threes. So I'm fine with him taking it, obviously. I think it's a big part of his game, being a stretch big. The volume is just what I've had an issue with. And then it's when he does get into the paint, he's timid. He's shy. He shies away from contact when he drives to the paint. He does like Euro step layups when it's like a 6'5" forward in front of him or a 6'2" guard. He's Euro stepping and fading. He needs to put them in the rim. Like he's got long arms. He's bigger, stronger than those guys. He needs to be aggressive in seeking contact and not being scared to get fouled, to, you know, be contacted around the rim. So I'm hopeful that, yeah, like he said, he's working on that right now. But again, it's the same thing with Keith and the defense. It means nothing to me unless I see it. Too often last year, I saw Alex R shy away from contact. Basically, it was like he didn't want to get fouled. He wanted to just score and move on from the point. So I hope he worked on that, because he shot 39.4% from the field last year as a 7-footer. That's awful. It's why a lot of people didn't think he should have made any rookie team, let alone the first team all rookie. It's definitely a focus for him. He needs to stop fading on layups, shying away from contact, like I mentioned. So I'm glad that he mentioned and said that that's something he's been working on, is finishing in the paint, around the rim, close to the basket. But I'll believe it when I see it. I didn't see anything about him adding weight. Hopefully he did, because I think he definitely was one of the guys like Johnson that needed to get stronger. Excuse me. But we'll see if that is if that's the case. Moving forward to Blaw. It was obviously reported by the team that he had surgery a week ago. Should miss probably all of training camp, and then about a week or two into the season, probably nothing greater than that. And that was kind of reaffirmed at today's media day, that timeline. He said he feels a lot better after surgery. He wasn't like shooting or anything at media day. I didn't see him, you know, with any type of cast or splint or anything on that finger that he injured. I think it was a thumb on a shooting hand, which would be his right hand. So I didn't see anything there. That doesn't mean when he's working out, he doesn't wear anything. I'm sure he does. It's just I didn't see it. And then he said he worked on his body, his handle, his shot. I really hope the shot came first, because, yes, he does need to get stronger. I agree with that. His handle needs to get tighter if he wants to be a guy that you can put on ball, because I like his vision. It's clearly developed. He did a triple-double against Brooklyn last year. But the shot is the most important. Like, you can't have guys with 2 feet in the paint when you have the ball on the three-point line again this year. That's just unacceptable. It's borderline an unplayable trait. And no matter how good you are on defense, if you have guys that do not respect you at all as a three-point shooter, you derail the offense in the modern-day NBA. And so Blaw needs to hopefully first and foremost work on his shot, and the handle and the body hopefully comes along as well. Hopefully he got a little stronger, because he's a pretty skinny guy. But certainly the shot is kind of what I'm looking at. Said he worked on it this offseason. He played a lot in Eurobasket too. So we'll see how that works out in the regular season when he eventually returns in a week or two. I guess by the time he'll return, it'll be first week November. So we'll see how he plays out. Bub seems just like a fun guy to be a teammate of. Like, he just seems like he meshes well with everyone. Even in the pictures, he's always has a big, you know, big smile. That's something that I noticed from some of the media content wise. But in terms of his presser, he said a major focus this offseason was getting more attempts at the rim, because he called that a weak part of his game, was getting to the rim. which I couldn't agree with more. I mean, that's the same boat as Saar not being able to draw contact or shying away from interior shots. Like, Bub showed an inability to get past his defender and get to the rim, put pressure on the rim, put pressure on the defense, and draw guys in so he can, you know, pass it out, break down the defense to get guys open looks. If you're a point guard, that's a big, big trait, especially a starting point guard. And so if he's going to be starting at point guard, he's going to be on ball more. He needs to do that. And so it's nice to see him, you know, that he's self-aware that was a bad weak part of his game. Seems like he worked on it. So his rim pressure wasn't good enough as a rookie. And it's nice to see that he's taken the steps to improve that. He also said he gained 11 pounds this offseason, went from 193 to 204. Again, another good development. A lot of the rookies that the Wizards have been drafting have been these lanky wings or guards that need to add size. They're all really thin. So obviously it's nice to add weight. Will Riley's another guy that definitely needs to get a lot bigger, gain weight slash muscle. So hopefully he's someone that follows suit too. But nice to see that Bob is out there putting some weight on, understands some of his weaknesses and clearly worked on it. Whitmore gave some obviously eventful answers. He'll be back in DC. I feel like no one really talks about how good that trade was, and we'll see, I guess, throughout the season. But even if he's not like the guy that some people think he might be coming in, it's the value is just too good to pass up, and obviously an opportunity for him to come home and play in the DMV. So I think Ben Strober asked him if he has a chip on his shoulder, obviously being traded from Houston, coming to DC, and Cam gave a pretty cool answer. He said, quote, "I've had a chip on my shoulder since the day I got drafted," end quote. If you remember, Cam was supposed to go four or five, definitely before the Wizards, who had seven in that draft. And so, I guess technically eight, and then traded up seven, but kept falling. And I think it was 18, maybe, that he was selected by Houston. So he had a pretty long fall in the draft. And I'm sure he feels a little disrespected by Houston that he really couldn't see the floor at any point last year. And they had a great rotation, obviously, were the second seed in the West, but probably feels slighted there that he really couldn't crack the rotation, played, you know, borderline, you know, garbage time minutes for them and blowout wins or losses. And so said he's looking forward to playing in DC, got the chip on his shoulder. You always want someone with a little edge. Trey Johnson spoke about Whitmore. This was pretty telling. He said, quote, "I haven't seen anybody stop Cam in transition. Nobody standing in front of that," end quote. I mean, Cam Whitmore, 6'7", listed at 235 pounds. Like, he's a big dude. He's a fast, athletic dude for that size and that height. So he's barreling down in transition, 94 feet with the ball. Like, yeah, it's like, you know, no one's standing in front of LeBron. No one's standing in front of those guys like Giannis. And I'm not comparing him to them, but I'm saying he's a bigger dude, and he's like them, fast with the ball in transition for someone of his size. So I think, again, for a Wizards team that likes to play fast, likes to get on the break, I think that could also play to their benefit. McCollum, Middleton basically were asked a lot about being the veterans on the team. They'll both be 34 on opening night, both making $34 million. They know they're here, obviously, to collect their paycheck, and because they're under contract, they know this team's going to be pretty bad, to put it in lighter terms. So I think they know their role. They both talked at length about kind of their excitement about just kind of being a veteran, someone that everyone can lean on. CJ kind of gave advice to Trey, basically saying like, yeah, like it's great that all you care about is basketball, but you need some hobbies. And I mean, CJ, I think, was the president of the Players Association. I don't know if he still is. He obviously is really big into wine. I think he said he has some sort of vineyard. I could be reading that wrong, but I know he's very into wine. There's a lot of off-court stuff. And so obviously I think I mentioned this even before media day, that I think McCollum's a terrific veteran at the two guard for Trey. And even more so now, it seems like he's really taking that role serious, which is really nice. Moving forward to Keyshawn George, who, as I mentioned in a couple episodes ago, he should start not only at forward, but he is the player I'm most excited about on this Wizards roster in terms of that young core. Really think he's going to make a big leap, especially after watching him dominate America, being on that All-Star team, the best five in that tournament. Excuse me, just really excited about what George will bring this season. Again, like AJ Johnson, like Bob Carrington, Keyshawn said he added 4 pounds of lean muscle this offseason, and that he wants to be more aggressive, more vocal, and improve his paint play. He seemed like he was way more vocal, way more comfortable as one of those older second-year players on the summer league team. And even in offseason workouts, I've heard from people that Keyshawn has been a real leader in getting everyone together and making sure everyone's working hard and everyone feels involved and is just bought in. And that's obviously nice to see from anybody, let alone your second year forward. So that's great. He said he also wants to create his own shot, which is also nice to see, you know, because you know the defense is there. He needs to be more efficient shooting the three ball. But if he's ability, he creates an ability to put the ball on the floor. You know, his game obviously ascends to a different level. If he can be a playmaker, even better. And so it's nice to see that he's kind of trying to build his game to be more, you know, sort of all around. And then he had, I think, my favorite quote of the day when he was talking. He was asked about Trey Johnson. He said, quote, "Working out with Trey, you see how locked in he is from the start. That's all he thought. That's all he thinks about. Every single rep is to the max. Every rep is game-like," end quote. I mean, he was just raving about him. He just said Trey's just so locked in when he's on the court. He's so meticulous about his craft and making sure he's doing things at game speed, making sure the rep is perfect, making sure everything he's practicing is at game speed. It's perfect. He's seeking perfection, and no one will ever reach perfection, but seeking it as a 19-year-old rookie who hasn't even played an NBA game yet. And all he does is preach basketball, play basketball, live basketball, breathe basketball. And it's just from anybody you hear about Trey Johnson from, it's this kid just loves the grind. He loves, you know, working on his game. He loves adding things to his bag. He loves perfecting his craft. And Keyshawn gave a nice little look into that and some of the workouts they've done together. And so that's obviously really promising about Trey. And then Corey Kispert, to kind of round it all out, this was a fun quote. He said, quote, "I need to be more aggressive for our team to have success, for myself to have success," end quote. Some fans got a hold of it. A lot of them saying, no, you don't need to be more aggressive. Please don't be more aggressive. Mainly all the people that you would think, you know, are saying Corey Kispert should be traded are the people that obviously were not fans of that quote. But like, newsflash, Corey Kispert's a really solid NBA player. He's only making 13 mil over the next four seasons because that extension kicks in this year under a pretty solid team-friendly contract. When his shot is on, he is a really solid off-the-bench volume scorer because he can put it on the deck now. He's a really efficient driver, cuts to the basket in a very timely manner, is able to move off ball and get open. He's added to his game to be more than just a shooter. So again, down year shooting the ball last year, I think a lot of Wizards fans are down on Kispert and his game. But I'm here to remind you, like, he's still a solid player. He's on a good contract. He's going to be a part of this 8-9 man rotation. You better get used to it. And so I don't mind him saying that. Like, I think an aggressive Corey Kispert is better than someone who isn't great on defense. And if he's not shooting the ball and being aggressive on offense, why do you have him out there? He needs to be aggressive. He needs to be looking for a shot. He needs to just be more efficient at that, I think, this season. So again, those are some of the quick hitting things that I was kind of interested in. Also, FYI, for those that care, Jordan Poole used to wear number 13. That is now being worn by Sharif Cooper, or at least that's what it looks like from the media day photos. So that'll be a unique look this year. I doubt you'll see Sharif too much, especially early on that two-way deal. But that's just something to consider, because we cover everything here on the Wizards podcast, from numbers to media day. So again, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Talked a lot about you know, what this team is trying to build. I mean, obviously, I think Dawkins reemphasized that it's still the initial phase of the rebuild. Keefe did too. It's still the end of phase one, and once this season happens and they're going to suck again, then maybe they can move on. And I'll tell you this, like, I've seen clips of Darren Peterson at Kansas. Bill Self, like, couldn't even describe how good he already is. Bill Self basically said, like, I've had Wiggins here, I've had Embiid here, I've had guys that are just on otherworldly, and never have I asked them to carry a team. But I'm asking Peterson to carry this team because I know he can, basically. I mean, that's unbelievable praise. And I'm sure the Boozer twins are going to kill it at Duke. You have Dibansa at BYU. You have so much talent in this draft. And so, yes, the Wizards are going to try to keep that top 8 protected pick. But they're also going to try to develop. And Cafe obviously stressed they want to compete. They want to win. Like, they're obviously going to say that. And I'm sure they do. Like, the player's job is to compete, to work hard, to practice, to improve, and to win games. That's their job. It's the front office's job to low-key put the team in the best positions to succeed moving forward and into the future. And towards the end of the season, like you saw last year, the year before, and I'm sure at the end of this season, you'll see them be strategic in not trying to actively lose, but kind of working around it to be like, oh, well, we're still trying here. It's just like, you know, this guy's hurt, or, you know, we're not playing these veterans now because we want to give looks to these guys before the season ends. So again, it's going to be another season. And if you're not bought into that, then, you know, that's kind of, that's your prerogative. But obviously I'll be there for all 82, like I have been. Preseason starts October 12th. I'll be there for that. Oh, by the way, before I go, I also want to talk a little bit about the ongoing monumental battle with YouTube TV and Hulu Live TV, because, I mean, by the time I release this pod, it'll be September 30th. I don't know if it's on the 30th or after, but I believe that's the last day of Monumental's contract with those two providers to carry Monumental as a channel, because Monumental is now an independent RSN. It's been for a couple of years. Obviously, it was bought out from NBC by Ted Leonsis. Monumental broadcast the Wizards games, Capitals games, Mystics games. It is the place for those fan bases to watch, especially in the DMV market. For me, I'm not in that market, so I don't get Monumental with my YouTube TV. Like, I get NBC Sports Philadelphia because that's the region I'm in, but I'm able to watch it on League Pass because it's not blacked out or restricted in my area. For DMV residents, though, it is. So you can't watch the Wizards on League Pass. As Monumental has put out in a couple statements, they're basically saying that YouTube TV, Hulu Live TV, they're not negotiating in good faith. It's tough for an independent RSN, obviously, to find people to take their package on. And so I'm sure YouTube and Hulu are like, we don't feel too obligated to do this. We hold all the cards, and you're just going to have to take the deal that we're offering you. That's kind of the way I see it. And Monumental's kind of at a crossroads because I think they have to. Like, what else are they going to do? Because if it, you know, the cap season starts, I think, in like a week, maybe less. The Wizards start in a couple weeks. If you go into the season, if you're Monumental and you don't have a deal in place with those providers, where can people in the DMV watch your games? Because it's blacked out on NBA League Pass. Stream East is down. Like, it's pretty hard to find illegal streaming services. And even if you do find it, it's like 3-4 minutes delayed. Is that really how you want to watch a live sports game? Is 4 to 5 minutes after every other person has already seen it? You can't really, you know, go on Twitter because you don't want things to get spoiled. It makes it an annoying watch. It makes it a hassle. And so if that's the case, you know, DMV residents are handcuffed. I guess they would. Now, you can get the Monumental app and just pay for Monumental like that, but I believe that's a lot more expensive. And if you're not just going to cancel your YouTube TV or Hulu subscription because Monumental isn't included. Like, I would assume if you have those streaming services, you have them because you want to watch a bunch of channels, not just because you want to watch Monumental Sports. If that was the case, then you would just buy Monumental Sports through the app. So I think it'll be make it a lot more inconvenient, a lot more expensive for some people, because they'll have to carry those YouTube or Hulu subscriptions, plus also getting Monumental on the side. That makes it a hassle, makes it inconvenient, makes it more expensive. So obviously I think Monumental wants to avoid that. They also want to avoid having a lot of people stop watching their broadcast simply because they can't. And so it's a really tough battle. And Monumental is putting out a bunch of stuff, basically saying we are at the point where we need our fans to tweet out and call and email YouTube and Hulu and basically call them out for it. I doubt that's going to do anything. It kind of signals a desperate move, in my opinion, for Monumental in terms of, you know, clearly they're a little like scared. I mean, I know Zach Leonsis went on Monumental to basically plead with fans that they are on the right side of this and they're negotiating in good faith, whereas YouTube and Hulu are not negotiating in good faith. They're really pushing that narrative. And again, you got to take what Monumental does with a grain of salt. They are owned by Ted Leonsis, who owns these teams. They're obviously in PR mode. They're not going to go out and say that we are the problem. And you're not hearing anything, or at least I haven't seen any statements from YouTube or Hulu, because, I mean, no one that's covering the team is writing about that. I feel like this is a big story, right? I feel like the fact that the fan bases of these teams might not be able to, not the Mystics realistically, because their season just ended, but like Caps, Wizards fans, by the start of the season, like the fact that you might not be able to watch your team's games the way that you usually do, I feel like that's a pretty big deal. But maybe that's just me. I feel like it's pretty important. It seems like a lot of people are kind of annoyed. It seems like Monumental is just annoyed that YouTube and Hulu kind of have all the cards and they don't maybe want to take the deal because I'm sure it would be a lot less money and they're an independent RSN. They need to make money. So again, I'll leave it at that. If you want to scroll my Twitter, I posted more details about it, the statements. My friend Troy Halliburton wrote an excellent story. It's a free Substack. So, I mean, I tweeted out the link. If you want to scroll that too, you can scroll his page at Troy Halliburton on Twitter. But he kind of explained it really well and was basically like, look, the Suns have one that's way cheaper and that they do on their own. And it's kind of a channel and they don't have to rely on people. And that's the way to go. And so he's kind of, you know, asking the Wizards, why don't you just do that? If YouTube and Hulu won't negotiate in good faith, why don't you do what teams like the Suns have done? And a lot of other teams have done it too, especially in the Phoenix area. So that's an interesting thing to kind of monitor. It's an interesting development before the season. It would suck for Wizards fans if they can't watch their favorite teams, Caps fans too, because of an ongoing dispute between two companies that just can't figure it out. Like that would be unfortunate. For all parties involved, I think, but especially the fans, they're hurt the most in this case. So that would be unfortunate, but just want to get that in there real quick. That's going to wrap it up for this episode about that, about Media Day. So again, hope you guys enjoyed. I should be back in a week or so, you know, depending on if anything important happens in Wizards news and Wizards world and training camp or whatever. So I'll monitor that. Pods are going to start looking up soon and picking up on my season preview out. At some point, probably a week or so before the season. So definitely look out for that. But that's going to do it for this episode. Again, appreciate all the support. Thanks for listening, guys. Go Wiz.